Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. If you can hear us a bit better than you could last week, that is because we are back into our our normal fortress of solitude where we are recording. We had a lot of fun on the floor of SigmaCon at LSU. Nice visits from our friendly neighborhood Spider-Man and our guest host and all. Really, it was a really fun time, and hope everybody who came out enjoyed themselves. So, Chad, it's been another crazy, weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news, and this week we'll conclude with the Oscars, but which we will get to our thoughts here in a moment. But let's start with some upbeat news, because there's some downers in this week's movie news, but let's start on an upper. So Sam Raimi wants to make a movie about the Bermuda Triangle. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on Sam Raimi doing a Bermuda Triangle movie?
Okay, so one, do people still even know what the Bermuda Triangle is? I know you know, because you're of a certain age, but do people younger than us know what the Bermuda Triangle is?
I am unsure of this, Chad.
See, I remember hearing about it as a kid and watching TV specials and like being fascinated by, ooh, this thing like really happens and people just go there and just die and disappear.
Amelia Earhart's story.
Yeah, and there was one I remember watching it. They kept documenting all these things happening. And, you know, up until I heard this news, I forgot the Bermuda Triangle was a thing. So there's that. And then there's also, do you remember what Sam Raimi's last movie was?
Sam Raimi's last movie, Spider-Man 3?
See, this answer right there is also another indication of what I think about this. No, that is wrong. His last movie was The Great and Powerful Oz.
Oh, that's right. Great and Powerful Oz, which actually made a lot of money. It was released in a March, and it made quality money.
Okay. I don't remember how much money it made.
It just did not make enough money for them to create a franchise out of The Great and Powerful Oz, and Franco got busy doing 5,000 other things, so.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't a flop. I just didn't know if it, like.
It was one of those movies that benefited from its place on the calendar.
I mean, I saw it. It was okay. I've only seen it that once, but I didn't mind it. But that movie was like 2010, 2011. It's been like 6 years since he's made a movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's produced some stuff, but he hasn't made a movie.
He's been working. I think he's been. They do an Acts of an Evil Dead TV series.
TV series on Stars
isn't he pretty heavily involved with the scripting and the executive producing of that? So,
I know he's executive producing. He's probably directed an episode, and he's probably involved in like the writing and stuff, because Bruce Campbell's back as Ash. Right. So it's Ash versus the Evil Dead. So, I mean, he's busy. It's just that he hadn't made a movie. And and I would like to see a movie from Sam Raimi. It's just, I don't know about this, because I don't know how big of a thing this can be.
True, but Christopher Nolan's making a movie about the evacuation of Dunkirk.
But it's Christopher Nolan, and it's a war movie, and most people equate war movies with, like, you know, those kind of Oscar kind of things. And then you attach that to Christopher Nolan's name, and you put it in the summer, and people are going to notice. While Sam is respected, Sam is not the caliber of a Christopher Nolan, so. And the subject matter is not something that like strikes
fear into the hearts of men.
No, it's just like, because I know what it is, I have a very,
it's interesting. It's interesting. It's adventurous. It's adventurous.
I would say that, yes.
But I mean, depends on who you get to star, and it depends on what your premise is. I mean, if you're following a group of guys who were on a pirate ship in the 1800s that get lost in the Bermuda Triangle, I mean, that's, and are trying to find their way out, that would be something interesting.
Except you said pirates, and then I think of Johnny Depp's Pirates, and I'm like, pass.
Which, yay, that Super Bowl ad actually got some people on board with Pirates 5.
That is the one that I have not seen. So I will take everybody's word for it.
Because it's 30 seconds of the battle of the, you know, the classic, you know, pirate ships firing cannons at one another, people jumping from ship to ship, you know, the action beats.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah, those always get people. Now, it's the rest of it.
But, I mean, Raimi doing a Bermuda Triangle movie gives me hope, because I think it could actually be really good, and the material can be interesting. It all depends on what the story is. And it's not, to my knowledge, it's not like he's working off of a blacklisted script or anything, where, like, it's out there. Yeah. We just,
you know. Yeah, I don't know what this is, so.
Yeah, well, for those of you who don't know, The Blacklist is a list that comes out every year, the best unproduced scripts in Hollywood. And they're made available for publishing, and so you can actually read them, and then eventually sometimes they get picked up and actually made. That's not what this is. This is just an idea, I think, that kind of tickled his fancy, and, you know, when you have the amount of money that Raimi does, you kind of can afford to be choosy about what projects you take on.
Mm-hmm.
So.
We will see how it goes.
We will see how it goes. So, Chad, that Mulan thing, that's going to be a live-action movie.
Mm-hmm.
One of the 18 bajillion million that Disney has going right now.
You mean the blank check that they have every year now? Yeah, that's what this
one
is.
One of the blank checks that they have every year.
Yeah.
Because every movie now makes $1 billion.
Pretty much. Between the live actions and the Star Wars and the Marvel movies, they just...
In the Pixar and the animation.
They just print money. And then they can do smaller things that nobody sees, like Queen of Katwe and the Disney nature things, which are also very good. Just nobody sees them.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people forget that Touchstone, which produced a lot of the movies that we love coming of age in the 90s, were...
That's Disney. That is very much Disney. The most notable one probably be Who Framed Roger Rabbit. People obviously know that's Disney, but nobody knows it's Touchstone except for me, because I look at things like that.
Almost the Ernest movies were Touchstone.
That's right, they were. I know there's a bunch, and I can't think of any of them besides Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but every time I saw that little blue thing come across, it's like, it's Disney money. I know where you're going.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so what do you think, make of the choice for director for Mulan?
What's the name of the person again? I can't remember. Who's directing this thing?
I mean, if I remember correctly, it's a female director. So
I think so. Let's see.
With an action background. So, the fact that you're going to do a live-action Mulan, and we talked before about do you or do you not do the talking dragon... You know, what elements of that cartoon do you reevaluate, especially considering that's the back end of classic Disney, you know? It's right in that realm with Tarzan and Hercules that's at the back end of the 90s that doesn't get received all too well.
Everyone I know that's like, college age, around college age, they're really, really fond of Mulan. Particularly the girls, like, they are, like, the way, well, most people feel that way about Lion King, but they, like, really, really attached on the Mulan. So, it's got while it's, like, on my tail end of the Disney thing, like, I'd only seen it once before I had a daughter, of a certain age, this is the kind of thing that they're really going for. And the director's name is Nikki Caro, and I don't, what else has she done? The Zookeeper's Wife, which hadn't come out yet. And McFarlane USA. So she's already worked with Disney.
Yeah.
I never saw McFarlane USA, but I've heard good things about it.
Yeah. So, that's the Costner...
Cross-country running cross, thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. So yeah, we have a female director helming it, which, because she's getting this movie, she's... like the second one that's getting $100+ million budget movie out of Disney camp within the year. The other one being Ava DuVernay. So,
who kind of earned it?
Yeah, I would say so.
Kind of earned it.
So I wish I'd seen anything by Nikki to have a better idea.
Kind of earned it. #OscarSoWhite.
Well, they did what they could to take that hashtag away this year. But
well, I mean, it was just offered up to them on a silver platter, especially with Moonlight.
Yeah.
Kind of, and Hidden Figures. Yeah. Like, it was kind of just, like, softballed up to them. Like,
yeah. Kicking the pass this year. Let's see what happens next year. Yeah. But, so I think that because Mulan is a, you know, the heroine is a heroine, it's good to have a female director. But yeah, I'm more interested to see, like, what are their story choices and casting and all that. The big thing being, well, not the biggest thing, but yeah, that dragon is a thing because people are attached to the dragon. So how do you do that in the other live action movies we got so far?
Hey, Eddie Murphy's still alive. It doesn't seem like they're doing a lot of recasting on their voice work. So
we'll touch on that one later. I got some thoughts. But like, Beauty and the Beast is a different thing because it's like everything has to be inanimate and talk. But like for Cinderella, that had the cartoon had the mice,
but the mice didn't talk.
They didn't talk in the live action when they talked in the cartoon. So, but they were very much characters and did unmousy things in the movie. So, do you go that way with that? But the dragon is kind of critical in being able to talk because he represents certain things from her family. So, yeah, I don't know what the hell to do with the dragon. But we'll see. Like everything else, it's all positive. And if Beauty and the Beast blows it out the water,
which we all expect it to.
Yeah. My brother sent me, they released a clip, the first part of her singing Belle walking through the beginning of the town. And he was like, I would change the beneficiary of my life insurance for this movie right now. So, this is a 30-year-old man saying this.
And it will be the same movie.
Yeah,
it will be almost the same movie, line for line. There may be one new song, but like,
I think there's two or three. But yeah, it's pretty much the movie beats for beats, and I don't care. Nobody else is going to see this cares. They just want to see a live-action version of this. They've cast it well. People might have some problems with some of the character designs, but overall, the more they've shown us, the more people have gotten over it. So that's going to knock it out of the park. And then everybody's going to be up and sitting there waiting for Mulan.
Yeah, I mean, their live action slate down the line. Of course, their Dumbo movie's kind of in limbo right now.
That one needs to go away.
With Burton. They've got live action Beauty and the Beast coming. They've got live action Winnie the Pooh coming. They've got live action Mulan coming. They got live action Lion King coming. They've got Jungle Book 2 at some point, I'm sure. So, I mean, there's a lot on that plate.
Yeah, I don't know which one's coming next. It seems like it's between Mulan and Lion King. But Lion King's only barely ahead of Mulan in terms of things getting done.
Well, we'll see. I mean, they're really far down the line, obviously, with their preparation and planning for these live action remakes of their animated movies. So they're you know, Maleficent, and so that's another one. There's a Maleficent sequel on the books at some point.
That one might get lost.
Maleficent, Cinderella, Jungle Book, and Beauty and the Beast.
So you're seeing it as of right now, it's like one a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't know which one we get next year.
So, all right, let's move on. So Chad, Scarlett Johansson is a very beautiful young woman who's a proud mother and a very accomplished actress.
Mm-hmm.
She's about to participate in the anime remake of the live-action move version of the famous anime movie and TV series Ghost in the Shell.
Mm-hmm.
She got new footage today. This week, everybody was kind of excited and kind of making some positive noise. Their set visit got some positive feedback, yada yada. It's also a movie I believe is coming out in March. Let me double check.
I'm pretty sure.
It is Ghost in the Shell, the last day of March. But Scarlett Johansson's in that movie, and the only reason it's getting made, and it's, you know, she had a lot of controversy, obviously. But she made some comments on doing some preliminary press about getting asked, as she does everywhere she goes, about the possibility of a Black Widow standalone movie. And she said that the character is ripe for a standalone, and she'd love to do it. Chad, are we going to get a Black Widow standalone movie before Scarlett Johansson ages out and can't fit into a leather Catwoman suit anymore?
I don't know.
Keep in mind that as of right now, we have three unannounced dates for 2020.
Okay, so with me and my like dreaming phase of what Marvel's going to do next, I would say no. And it has nothing to do with her or Black Widow. It has everything to do with what's coming next. And again, this is in my mind. That in my mind, some kind of way, they pry Fantastic Four from Fox Cripple's hands and take it. And they launch Phase 4, going into Fantastic Four and moving forward. And let's not forget that we... even if without that, we're getting more Spider-Man sequels. We're probably going to get a Black Panther sequel, a Doctor Strange sequel. All that stuff is going to float around there after 2020. So, while we don't know what they're doing, it's still... And Captain Marvel, we'll probably get a Captain Marvel sequel, even though we haven't gotten the first one yet. All of that stuff is in the ether for them to do. And while Black Widow is a popular character, I don't know if they can just fit it. Like, legit... Money-wise, I don't think it's a problem, because out of all of them, you can do hers for the cheapest, and it'll probably make the most.
Well, here's the thing for me. It's like an Agent Carter movie. It's a good idea, or Agent Carter TV series. It's a good idea in theory. The problem that you're going to end up having with this is chronology. A Black Widow movie would, to me, work best in her days between being a KGB operative and a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, mm-hmm. and how Nick Fury recruited her, and how her and Barton got that red in their ledger. That would, to me, be the premise of the movie. And to me, you go pay Joss Whedon to do that movie. Because it's not as a standalone. There's no trying to set up 8,000 other things. You obviously have a good working relationship together. He cares, obviously, about the character of Black Widow because he made her, essentially. Like, she was introduced in Iron Man 2, but she was developed as a character in the Avengers movie, the first Avengers movie. And so, to me, that's a no-brainer. Get Whedon to write it and direct it, get Johansson to star, get Renner to come in, and you do it. The problem is, it doesn't fit into the current chronology. You'd be telling a period piece story of, you know, set somewhere in the 1980s.
Not the 80s.
The 1990s, somewhere in that era.
Late 90s, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, does Marvel want to do a movie where they have to explain to the audience where this fits in the timeline?
I think do they want to do it? Probably not. I mean, they can do it. Honestly, everything you said, I agree with everything you said, and everything you said sounds better to me as like 6-run Netflix series, because you can still, Joss will still do it, you can get them to do it, that it fits that way.
Yeah, now, the problem that you have with doing it as a Netflix series or doing it as a TV series is people will tell you that they feel like the character's getting shortchanged. Because this was the before we knew Captain Marvel was officially going to be a thing, this was the common complaint. Was like, look, they're going to do Wonder Woman before you get to whatever standalone female-led superhero movie you're going to do. And you've had a female-led superheroine on your books way longer than there was ever a DCEU. And yet they're going to beat you to the punch.
And, but that goes to Marvel's strength. Whereas DC, you tell them that and they're like, oh, we don't have it. Maybe we should work on something. They start making announcements and do dumb stuff. Marvel's like, nope. Stay the course. We like Black Widow, but this is the course. Stay the course.
Well, the benefit that you have is that they've developed a fully formed roster of characters that they can pull from. You know, they have the Pepper Potts. They have the James Rhodes. They have the James Rhodes. They have the Michael Peña's character from Ant-Man. They have Black Widow. They have Hawkeye. They have Coulson. They have Natalie Portman's character. They have Kat Downing's character. They have Eric Selwig. They have Heimdall. They have Odin. You know, they have these ancillary characters. They have Lady Sith. These ancillary characters that are floating around within their universe that have attachments and may have made positive impressions that they can utilize in one-shots or they can utilize in other ways. Yeah. The problem is people want to see a Black Widow movie.
I get it. They can do it either way. They can make a movie, or, I mean, as you said, she's fleshed out and you can continue to flesh her out better. Then that's the advantage of a Netflix series over a movie, is that they have more hours to tell these stories and flesh out the characters more.
See Jessica Jones.
Yes. So, and it fits to have, so you can have a Black Widow Netflix series, and then Hawkeye can come in there. He doesn't have to be in there the whole time. So you develop her,
and it's not their thing. And it's not like Renner is really picky about it.
Yeah, I mean, at one point he said, "I'll be down to do a Netflix series," and I think that's the route they should go. But to your point, people will feel like she's shortchanged. I just think it would better serve her and the story if it were a Netflix series, opposed to a movie.
A Netflix series with Joss Whedon writing and directing and show running.
Yeah, and this, I mean, just. If I was Marvel TV, and I'd be like, Marvel Films, do me a solid.
And there's your problem, because that would mean Feige would have to work with Perlmutter, and those two don't really get along that way.
No, but I think Perlmutter's like, they just promoted somebody higher up. I think he's handling like...
Jeff Loeb?
No. Jeff Loeb was over the TV, but he answers to Perlmutter. There's another guy they just promoted that would probably be... taking most of the duties that Perlmutter had. Perlmutter would still be the head, but he's probably doing most of the stuff. So, now's the time to do it. Perlmutter's got other things to worry about while his boy's in office. So, if you want to do something now while he's distracted, good time to do it.
I mean, I do think the character has a lot of upside for further development.
Yeah.
And certainly Johansson's a very talented actress and very capable of, I mean, you've seen how she's developed the role over the course of 5 appearances now. Iron Man 2, The Avengers, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Avengers Age of Ultron, Captain America Civil War, and then Infinity War would be 6.
Yeah, I guess that's right, yeah. I thought she's in more than that. It feels like she's in more than that.
No.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So Chad, we mentioned that there's a Ghost in the Shell movie. Your anticipation level, your thoughts on a white woman playing an Asian Autobot.
I have like zero anticipation for this movie. I really just don't care. It's
according to from everything I've heard, like the anime movie is like the gold standard of Japanese anime at that particular point in time.
I've heard that, and I've heard that's like the gateway drug in anime. I'm just not into anime, so I really don't care. The people I know that are into anime say that like the latest trailer, it looks like the anime they got the feel of it from there. So they're kind of excited. But then they still have that looming cloud of, well, whitewashing the main character, who is a robot, so theoretically anybody could play her, but they put a white woman. However, it is Scarlett Johansson, and the reason the movie's getting made is because she's in the movie. So it's,
and we know she can do action because we've seen Black Widow, and we've also seen Lucy.
Yeah, so it's a double-edged sword. You want this movie, if you're a fan of this anime, you want this movie made. The only way you're getting it made is if she's in it. So you just kind of have to live with that. But outside of all that, I mean, it looks fine. I just don't care.
Alrighty. Well, that again is March 31st release date. So, Chad, there was another movie that dropped footage that came with Lego Batman. That was the Power Rangers trailer. You talked a little bit about it last week, but you want to drop some more thoughts on it? I mean, the humor was certainly there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it felt more like Power Rangers.
Yes. The more they release stuff, the more it feels like the old Power Rangers with, like, a new spin to it. So, I don't think it... Like, I went into this movie thinking it's going to be, like, you know, a steaming pile of excrement. And
they did move it from January to March, so that showed some faith.
It did. I think they could have kept it in January because March is just, like... March is so packed with stuff. So that could hurt it. But the more they've shown, the more comfortable I feel with it. I have friends that are big Power Rangers fans. They're looking forward to it, but they're still firmly on the hashtag not my Power Rangers train until they see the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Myself, I'm like, you know, those old Power Rangers are still there. I just want to see what this new stuff is. And if they keep the spirit alive, then I'll root them on to continue to do different things.
And you're okay with Goldar being the end game there?
I mean, yeah, it's fine. I mean, he's... the only thing is, I mean, the way it happens, you would assume that Goldar is going to bite it at the end of this.
We've learned from toys since then that Rita is inside of Goldar and is basically...
Oh,
yeah, Goldar is basically the her version of the...
Azor?
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world.
It isn't, but I mean, like, I was looking forward to Dwayne The Rock Johnson playing Goldar, but that's just me.
That was never going to happen.
Or Drax. Get Batista coming in.
Maybe I got Batista, but I don't know. It's like, Goldar is a fan favorite, and a lot of... He was the first villain they fought in Power Rangers.
The very first episode.
They fought him when he was normal. They fought him when he was big. I think it's like one of the handful of times Goldar actually does stuff. And they didn't offer
instead of him. instead of just making one-liners to Rita Repulsa.
Yeah, he was a freaking moron. But he kept saying dumb stuff. Mm. But that made him endearing, and that's why I look forward to seeing him. And it was
funny. In the '95 movie. I know Rita is.
As long as Rita and Zed are. He's in there. He makes quips. I think he actually sticks.
You need to get that to me, because it has been a long time since I've seen the 95 version.
Do I have it on? I know I have it on VHS. I don't think I have it on
DVD.
But it always comes on. Like, it's rotated between Stars and HBO now. So every now and then I'll flip it on and be like, God, the CGI was terrible.
Yes, it was, but they made money. And that's been my thing. Like, I don't care what you do here. I was in 95, I was in third grade, I was 8 to 10 years old, I was pure Power Rangers fan, thought Kimberly was the hottest thing on the planet. Like, go Power Rangers, VR Troopers, the whole deal. Like, I got my Power Rangers movie. Not only did I get my Power Rangers movie, the generation that came after me got their Power Rangers movie with Turbo.
Nobody saw Turbo.
But it's there. So, like, I got my transformation of Green Ranger to White Ranger. I got Ooze. And I get him again later in X-Men Apocalypse. But, I mean, I got my Power Rangers movie. So I'm good. I got it in 95 when I was 8. Like, I'm fine. I'm happy. If you want to make this movie now and introduce new kids to Power Rangers, then by all means, go ahead.
And I think that's what this is.
It's like Double Dare. You know, they did Double Dare 2000.
Yeah.
It had a different host. It had different games, but it was still Double Dare just for a new generation.
That's what I think this is. I think... From the trailers, it looks like it captures the spirit. Like, there's a in one of those trailers, there's a scene where they actually show them fighting what I assume to be the putties.
Yeah.
And the way they fight is just like, that's Power Rangers.
Yeah, they've done a better job as this has gone along than that initial Max Landis, like, Chronicle trailer that they dropped originally.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a lot of good work to get themselves and build themselves some goodwill. So, I mean, and again, that's another March release. We're looking at...
I think it's between Beauty and the Beast and Ghost in the Shell.
That is the 24th.
Yep.
As the same weekend as Chips. This is your public service announcement that there is a Chips movie coming with Max Shepard.
You're way too amused by this movie.
I am amused by the fact that Max Shepard basically used his marriage to Kristen Bell to get a movie made.
This movie made. And he got Michael Pena in it. Michael Pena that can basically write his own ticket right now. And I don't know. Him and Dax must be boys, or he got some incriminating pictures or something.
So, let's move on. The guy... Corey, how do you pronounce his name? Not Farquaad. The guy who was going to do the It remake and then dropped out.
Oh, Cary Fukunaga.
Yeah. He is in talks to do a movie about Hiroshima. Your thoughts on another important historical event being brought forth into our lives through cinema?
Hiroshima is kind of a delicate thing.
Very touchy.
Yeah, I mean...
But, I mean, if Michael Bay can do a whole movie about Pearl Harbor...
See, if you had told me, Michael Bay wants to do a Hiroshima movie, I'm like, no. Hell no. Press stop. Like, right now.
Somebody greenlights that they need to be fired.
Yeah, there's nothing good coming to this. But Cary Fukunaga, I mean, the only thing I've really seen of him was True Detective, but he did the whole first season, and it was exceptional, so... I look forward to seeing what he can do. If he wants to do Hiroshima, I think he can do it, and he will do it in a respectful way. I just don't know. I don't know how you tell that story. I'm intrigued to see how he tells the story.
Tell it from the Japanese point of view and do the story of the little girl who folded 1,000 cranes after she got radiation poisoning.
So depressing. That's the thing. There is no, like, there's no happy ending in this. This movie, the point is going to be to make you depressed and to think about the things that have been done. For if you're, if you're a flag waving patriot, the things that you've done to wave that flag. And this is a doozy. So there's nothing optimistic to be gotten from this.
Especially not from that perspective.
No. But it does have, like, award season written all over it. So,
oh, yeah.
So, yeah, you do this right. Just go ahead and clear off some shelf space.
Alrighty. So, Tom Brady won a Super Bowl, and now they want to make a movie about him with Mark Wahlberg playing Tom Brady. Your thoughts on Marky Mark as the chosen one?
Did they seriously say Marky Mark as... Okay. So I try.
He's already played a quarterback once now.
I try not to curse on this podcast, especially some very choice words that are four letters and start with F. I want to drop a whole lot of those right now. I hate the Patriots. I hate Tom Brady. I don't like anything about them. This movie needs to go up somebody's backside and die. That's what needs to happen. This, forget somebody made this. Okay, so they want, of all the parts of Tom Brady's life, they want to make a film about the last Super Bowl, where he's already gotten 4 rings, and he got this 5th one solely because the Falcons offensive coordinator decided to tuck a thumb up his rear end and not call the right place. They got gifted a Super Bowl, and they want to make a movie about that, about them overcoming that? Why? He's already the golden child at this point.
According to the report, they will start with Deflategate and work their way through.
They didn't overcome anything. They cheated. They got punished. People turning to people punishing them. Whatever you think about Deflategate or not, if it was a frivolous punishment or not, it was. They did it. They got caught. They got punished. may have been a bit too much. It doesn't matter. It's nothing they had to overcome. It's not like, man, we lost our center. He just up and died on the field, and we got to play for him. No. He wanted the balls with less air in them. They caught that he got the balls with less air in them because they're habitual line steppers. They had to get punished. And now people are like, man, they overcame this bogus whatever. No. Shut up. This movie needs to go away. No. And I'm done talking about
it. But Chad, they overcame the commissioner who was evil and trying to keep them from doing the thing that they had to do. And then they had to overcome the Falcons to do it. They had to overcome the biggest deficit in Super Bowl history to...
If this movie gets made, the person that rooted for the Falcons to win the football game, I will personally hold them accountable. Because it's their fault this happened. You're up by 25 points, you had one job to do, and you couldn't do it, and now I gotta sit here potentially with a freaking Tom Brady movie starring Marky Mark, Mr. Boston himself. I don't know.
With Affleck as...
Yeah, that's all you need. You just
get with Affleck as Belichick.
Yeah, get Affleck a Darth Hoodie and then midget Marky Mark. And might as well throw Matt Damon in for good measure. There you go. Boston trifecta. And y'all just go ahead and run this movie.
Matt Damon as Josh McDaniels.
Oh, God, no. If this movie gets made, I'll be so angry. It sounds like something is going to die. And it needs to.
Well, I mean, it is from the same writers as that wonderful Chris Pine movie from last January about the Coast Guard member.
Oh. I mean, I didn't see that. I didn't hear it was bad, so I'm not going to hold that against him. I will hold this movie against him.
Alrighty. So, Chad, let's move on to some Marvel Fox news. So, Logan has had its press screenings incredibly early, actually. And word of mouth, that embargo got lifted real quick, didn't it?
Yeah, most people saw it on a Thursday, and the embargo lifted on a Friday, and they were basically throwing bouquets at it the minute the embargo dropped. So,
I've yet to read a negative review.
And the embargo is 2 weeks before it's actually released. And as I forget what show I was listening to, but as they pointed out, you know, when Fox doesn't believe in something, they won't drop the embargo until like a day before Fantastic Four. This is 2 weeks before, so they were supremely confident.
They wanted good word of mouth.
And they're getting it. So, and that bodes well for the movie. Now, the one set of podcasts that I listen to that hate the X-Men movies a little bit more than I do, still don't like Logan. So, I'm gonna figure that most people are going to like it. A lot of people that really, really like comics and really, really like Wolverine may not. I'm just hoping I enjoy it. I can care less.
It's a completely different version of X-23.
It's not even so much X-23. Like, when they were ranting about it, it was not really even her. It's just more things with Wolverine and how they feel he's portrayed. Like, This is Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, but it may not necessarily be the comic book representation.
But that's an issue that you've had to deal with since 2000, and you kind of have to own the fact that it's his role.
It is.
In public consciousness, there is no one else. That is going to be a huge problem for Fox, recasting this role eventually at some point. I mean, it's like saying, well, Downey's Iron Man isn't on point with every part of the comic book lore of who Iron Man is. I mean, his Iron Man isn't on point with everything that you want that character to be from a comic standpoint. But he so clearly embodies and defines what that character is in the public consciousness from the moment he gets in that Humvee in Iron Man 1.
Throughout anything with comics and when they go to other medium, what typically happens is the other medium adds stuff and then it gets adapted back.
See Iron Man 3.
Well, I don't know if they... No, the comics didn't take anything from Iron Man 3. They did not touch anything like that. But, like, a really easy case is, like, Superman flying. He didn't fly in the comics at first. They made the radio show, and it was easier for the makeup effects to sound like he flew. So that's how he started to fly in the comics. Iron Man, so the Iron Man in the comics is kind of like Robert Downey Jr. if he was turned down to like 2. Robert Downey Jr. turned up to like 11, so they've adapted that some of that personality.
And they adapted the Afghanistan origin story in the comics and all that. So.
Yeah, that comes because they have to reboot it every so often because you can't have him be the Vietnam War 2016 because then he'd be like 6 years old. Wolverine, they tried adapting him towards Hugh Jackman and making him like more important. The biggest thing would be taller and stuff, but that never really took. So Wolverine, they've tried it. It didn't really take, and it's come back. So the comic version of Wolverine is clearly different than this one. And if you don't like the Hugh Jackman version, I don't think you're going to like Logan. If you can get past that, I think it'll probably be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just interested to see because there is a very good point to be made about, you know, there's a very good point to be made about when you don't have anything else to live up to. Like, you're not burdened by anything else that can free you to do crazy, insane stuff. And with Jackman knowing he's walking away, it's the question. I have this conversation and this argument with my friend every day because he is a huge Nolan Batman fan. He thinks that Nolan walks on the water and is the god amongst all directors, even Spielberg. His argument, and we get into arguments all the time, because I say, A, Dark Knight Rises is not a great Batman movie, not a great movie overall, period. But my biggest problem with it is Nolan has the opportunity there to do something no director will ever have the ability to do ever again, and that is to kill Batman. He can kill him, and he can turn everything over to Nightwing and set everything up for a movie that will never happen. But he can kill Batman. Not only kill Batman, but kill Bruce Wayne too. Mm-hmm. And he didn't. He faked out. Spoiler for a movie that's like 9 years old. And like, you know, I have that argument all the time about no one's ever going to have that. Zack's never going to have that opportunity because Zack has to exist in the cinematic universe where Batman has to live forever. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't care what they keep saying. They're not going to kill any of these major characters in this Marvel Cinematic Universe in Infinity War. They're going to just walk away, retire, get paralyzed for the rest of their life. They'll find ways around it, just like they found ways around, hey, if Tony is having problems with the Mandarin, why doesn't he just call up Thor? Mm-hmm. You know, they found ways around all that kind of stuff. They'll find ways around, you know, turning things over to a new generation of Avengers. But, like, Nolan had that opportunity to do something on film no one will ever have the opportunity to do again, and he didn't. And the reason he had that was because he was committed to not... He wasn't committed to doing another movie. He'd already told them no to Justice League. He'd already told them no to directing Man of Steel. He'd already told them no to being the godfather of the expanded universe. He was going to make his trilogy. And so there was no pressure on him. He was not bound by any studio regulations. He could do whatever he wanted. Logan feels to me like Warner Brothers giving Mangold and giving Jackman here. Free reign. Here. You want to make an R-rated movie? It might be boring. But here, you want to do it in the style of neo-Western? Might be boring, but here. You know, you want to take a pay cut so that we'll make this movie R-rated? We'll add more to the back end. Here you go. You know, Wolverine doesn't have to live at the end of this movie. He can take the bullet and die for saving his child, X-23. Because Mangold said he wants to do an X-23 movie at some point down the line. So if that's something that the director wants to do, it would make sense to set it up this way. Xavier is the same way. Xavier can finally give in to his dementia. But But no one's ever going to have that opportunity again. Singer will never have that opportunity. No. Whoever they get to replace him on this new X-Men movie that Sophie Turner is talking about, you know, won't have that opportunity. Josh Boone, who's doing New Mutants, will never have this opportunity. Whoever they get to bring in as a shooter on whatever Fantastic Four project they end up doing, you know, won't have this opportunity. So make the most of it. Make the most of your freedom.
I agree with pretty much everything you said, except we're talking about Fox, and Fox doesn't care about your continuity at all.
Well, so, the X-Men franchise as a whole doesn't care about continuity.
Yeah, so you can kill them.
Especially considering that Logan takes place in 2024, the Sentinel version of the reality was 2021.
And he looks a whole lot more ragged.
Right.
Considering that's supposed to be 3 years. And he had a better... Whatever. But that all goes to the point that if they... Do I think they should kill any of these characters? No, because they are in a franchise and all that. But
Logan, yes. Because this is the only way you will be able... Like, it takes the pressure off of you of having to recast in the next 5 years. Because they don't have their stuff together right now with X-Men. They don't know how they want to continue with Sophie Turner and all of them. They don't know if they want Singer coming back. All they know is they've got Ken Bird making decisions.
Yeah, and normally I would think that, you know, that means they wouldn't recast. But, well, they just don't care. Like, they're going to do whatever they want and screw what came before, screw what's going to come after. We're going to do this right now and let the fans, if they feel like connecting the dots to continuity, get pissed off doing it, or just not worry about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of mental leaps you have to make.
Lots of them. So, while I think if you want to kill Wolverine, you kill him in this movie, I don't think that precludes them from not bringing him back and putting him in other things. I really think X-23 is the way to go to, like, fill a gap until you feel like you can bring Wolverine back.
Right.
But...
The other problem, too, is you're missing a whole lot of money on a potential Wolverine-Deadpool crossover movie. Which they said would have to, like, seriously erase their plans because they're just going to work toward X-Force. But Jackman and Reynolds in a movie, even if it's a cameo, would be money in the bank.
I think a cameo is not out of the realm of possibilities, but I don't think going forward with, like, Wolverine Deadpool will happen. I really think they should, from everything I've heard, the little girl that's X-23 is great. You need to put her in one of these scenes, but I don't know how you do it.
Well,
because
there is a post credit scene. They did say that for the Wolverine. Mm-hmm. My concern about X-23 moving forward is they portray her as a mute and deaf girl.
Oh, again, continuity. She can eventually. Oh, healing factor. Vocal cord. She can hear and stuff now. So, yeah, my problem with her is that she's in the future ahead of all of these movies, but it seems like she would fit best with the New Mutants.
But, yeah, she's way younger than even the New Mutants cast that they've announced.
Yeah, so I don't know how they... Realistically, they should have no way to fix it.
Well, I think we'll have more answers coming out of Logan, and once we see Logan in the post-credits scene and all that.
Yeah, I'm just prepared to be angry because, you know, continuity in Fox.
Yeah, the X-Men and the X-Men universe as a whole, they don't really care. Now, I know Sophie Turner did say they were filming a new X-Men movie this year, but the only one that I know of that might be filming this year would be New Mutants.
Well, they've heard those rumors that...
Josh Boone's New Mutants.
There were those rumors of them doing an actual straight-up X-Men movie entitled Supernova, and finally doing the Dark Phoenix saga.
What do you mean, finally, Chad? I was around for 2005 and 2003.
Yeah.
I got the Dark Phoenix saga. Not done very well, but I got the Dark Phoenix saga.
And ever since then, it's like, we gotta do it. We gotta do it right. So they rushed to get to Phoenix this time. And yeah, because when they dropped the synopsis for X-Men Supernova, which I read, it was a couple weeks ago, I forgot about it, but basically what they did was they took the trade paperback from the Dark Phoenix saga, and they copied it, and they slapped it on, and said, this is the synopsis for X-Men Supernova. Right down to the point that there's things that cannot possibly happen in this that they just stuck up in there just because they didn't care. Like, really? So I have questions if this movie even happens. And if it does, I
remember there were those reports a while back that they were ready to move on from Singer. And well, Singer's busy right now doing 20,000 Leagues.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think he's going to do this one. I don't know who's directing it, but as Sophie said, she's supposed to be shooting it this year, so I don't know what they're doing.
Unless she's talking straight up about Josh Boone's New Mutants, which she would be a part of. Because we know Storm's a part of it.
Yeah, but then at that point, it ceases being New Mutants and just becomes X-Men. Which I guess will go to the point that they've already said that this movie would be called X-Men : New Mutants. Which fans aren't really thrilled about because New Mutants were a separate thing from X-Men.
But right.
For branding purposes, I get it. But if they're bringing back all that cast and sticking them in this movie, then that shit.
And McAvoy's been rumored to make him to be Professor X, so you could just do.
It's just X-Men. They're just X-Men.
X-Men, the New Mutants.
Yeah. I guess that's the way it's going to go. We'll see. Fox.
Yes, Fox. So let's move on to a studio that has even more complications on its resume right now. As Jed buries his head in between his hands and gives up. Lawrence Fishburne is out on the press tour right now for John Wick 2.
Mm-hmm.
And he was asked about, whether or not his beloved Perry White would show up in Justice League. And he said no. And then he proceeded to give his thoughts on the DC Expanded Universe and their war against the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And Chad, what did the great actor Lawrence Fishburne have to say?
He basically said they're kicking their ass. And he's not wrong.
No. By every statistical measure.
Yeah. And this is not coming from Lawrence Fishburne actor. This is coming from Lawrence Fishburne comic book fan.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. Marvel is kicking DC's ass. But he also went on to say that he talked about Batman vs Superman, how he thought he pretty much praised the casting of Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor, calling him casting him as this nebulous Lex Luthor was brilliant to him, and how he really dug the whole Martha part. Yeah, and every time I see or read that part, somebody laughs when they see that part. But I believe him when he says it, because again, if he's going to be forthright enough to say that the company that he works for is getting their ass kicked, and they come back and say that the part that is probably the lampooned the most out of the last movie, that he got the part, I believe him. As far as his comments about Perry White not showing up, it just makes sense. If Perry was going to be in there, it wouldn't be there that long. We have too much to go on.
No, but he would be too shocked at the fact that Clark's actually alive.
Yeah, I've had conversations with my brother about this whole thing with Clark coming back, because Zach went out of his way to make sure everybody knows that when Superman died, Superman was as Clark Kent in an open casket in freaking Smallville they got buried. So how do you bring Clark Kent back?
Remember, Superman's obituary was front page, Clark Kent's obituary was back page.
Yeah, but you would think, particularly with the people that he works with, that actually went to the funeral. Again, if they were still in Metropolis and went to the Superman funeral, then they could say, oh, I didn't know it was closed. I didn't know it was an open casket. I never saw Clark. No, we see Perry White in Martha Kent's home with the Jenny girl, shout out to LSU, she went to LSU, with open casket Clark. The audience never sees Clark's face, but everybody else around acts like it is Clark in the casket. And Bruce and Diana say as much, and then we have the thing at the end. it's Clark's body, it's Superman's body in that casket. So, I don't know how you bring it back.
All that pomp and circumstance for an empty box.
Like in the comics, when this happened, they brought Clark back by saying when Superman and Doomsday fought and destroyed half the city, there were people that got caught in the rubble that they didn't clear up for weeks, and they just said Clark was in one of those, and Superman rescued him. They put a big show of it on. I don't know how you do that here. That's one of the many things that perturbs me about this, the ending of that movie.
So, I mean, his comments are honest, if nothing else.
I believe him, and that I see nothing wrong with his comments, and I appreciate his honesty. It's good to see somebody speak their mind and not just, like, bite their tongue because somebody's paying them.
Indeed. So, Chad, as we continuously break our rule about talking about DC movies that are past Justice
League... I don't even know why you made this rule.
Well, they keep making news, so I've kind of got to.
Which is why I don't know why you made the rule. Like, the minute you made the rule, it's been every week.
Well, here's the thing. I did not know that there was a Suicide Squad 2. I did not know that poor David Ayer, who took the browbeating of a lifetime on a daily basis in the press leading up to that movie, took all the arrows, had his own project Bright rejected by Warner Brothers and have to go to Netflix. He did a huge solid for the company, and he's not being asked to come back for a Suicide Squad 2. A, I didn't know there was going to be a Suicide Squad 2, and B, I didn't know that they would not want Ayer to come back for it. C, I did not know that they would want to go after the caliber of talent that they are going after. Because reports have surfaced that Mel Gibson, he of Hacksaw Ridge fame, is on a first date with the material and thinking about trying to do a Suicide Squad 2.
So, to all the things you said, David Ayer, yeah, he got beat up for it, but Warner Brothers, like I said, you did us a solid, and they gave him the Harley Quinn movie, which seems to be going on. So I thought that was going to take the place of Suicide Squad.
The Siren, Gotham City Sirens.
Yeah. I thought that was going to take the place of Suicide Squad. So when they, again, this is DC's thing, like, they had a slate, and that slate is pretty much kablooey, and they're just like, we're going to do Suicide Squad 2, and we want Mel Gibson.
And if we can't get Mel Gibson, we have a list of C candidates.
Yeah, but pretty much we just want Mel Gibson, and so...
We want to talk about a hyper-violent comic book movie? Just wait till you see the Mel Gibson comic book movie.
So, let me get my Mel Gibson disclaimer out the way. So, Mel Gibson has had some issues in the past that it finally seems like...
Issues with alcoholism and anti-Semitic statements.
Yeah, and there's also that... I forgot about the recording he left for his girlfriend, which I heard again. And I ain't fond of that one. So, he got some issues, and he was in Hollywood's doghouse for a long time.
He was in director's jail.
Yeah, and Hacksaw Ridge came, and it seems to be that they're letting him poke his head out. And Warner Brothers is using that as an opportunity to speak to him. So, everything I'm going to say about Mel Gibson is going to be as Mel Gibson as the director, not as the person. As far as Mel Gibson the person, I kind of wish he didn't do anything else, because he did some vile, reprehensible stuff. But... As far as Mel Gibson, the director, so I get why Warner Brothers wants him, because his name is coming out and is rising again. He's a very good director. He can make some, I think he can do the action, and I think he wants to work with Will Smith. So there's all those cons, and it's mostly for them it's the big name and what that means with it. However, it's also everything that comes, his baggage that I just mentioned before. Which is why, if Marvel were to do this, people would eviscerate them for hiring him. When they see stuff from the movie, they would kind of calm down. people will still be mad at the premiere, but then we'll go on to make buckets of money. And while people might be like, man, that's that Mel Gibson one Marvel did. I don't know if they should have done that, but man, that was a fun movie. That would have been how that would have went. DC, on the other hand, they keep getting kicked in the nuts every week. And they're not on stable ground. So while they could use the boost of a name of Mel Gibson, all of his dead weight kind of drags that all down. And while the movie could be good, because I firmly believe he will make the movie he wants to make, and he will tell Warner Brothers to go take a flying flip off the pier. I don't know. If Wonder Woman and Justice League are good, they can make this higher and probably sustain the backlash they'll get from it. If not, this is just another, this is more kicks in the nuts that lead to kicks in the face. So that's where I'm at with that. They're in a tough spot. If I were them, I wouldn't touch Mel Gibson because they're not in a place where they can, they already have enough things going on. But
dude is actually in a competitive race for best actor, best director, I mean.
Yeah, I hear that. And if he went, but even if he wins, all the things people think about him don't go away. It's just, again, if it were any other studio, even Fox, and I don't think much of Fox, if it were Fox, I'm like, I mean, yeah, they got some swings and misses, but they got some good hits too, and they can take it. DC is not in the play. They are on the shakiest of rounds. And Mel Gibson is like, you know, it's like Yokozuna decided to step on the fault line. It's like, this is not going to work.
So Chad, speaking of kicks to the face and kicks to the nuts, we reported last week on our podcast and had a very spirited discussion about Matt Reeves, he of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and War of the Planet of the Apes fame, coming aboard to direct The Batman. And then there was no more contract negotiations, and Matt Reeves is no longer directing The Batman. Your thoughts on said discussions breaking down?
So I'll start off by saying that this news dropped on Friday, and right after it dropped, there were two Hollywood reporters, one Justin Crowe from Variety, and then Berto Gonzalez from The Wrap. They both came out and said, "This is negotiations playing out in public." Because his representatives know that DC's not in a good place, and they didn't want to give in on some things, so they were like, "Fine, we'll put this out in the public, and we'll see what happens." So it very well could be that this is just a negotiating tactic, and Matt Reeves ends up being the director for Batman. That is my other information side of this. Now, purely optics as a fan and stuff. This is like sound the alarm fire. Again, it's like you had one that you just got out and you didn't have to lose the whole house. Like you literally just put it out. You just put out this stove fire, this grease fire that could have potentially taken your house, but it's like, we got this calmed down. And right after you do that, you like blow a breaker in the back and then the wall's on fire. And you're like, well, what am I supposed to do? Why? What am I supposed to do with this? This is what this is. Again, it could be negotiating, then you can just go ahead and like hit the fire extinguisher against the wall. You gotta replace the wall, but you're fine. The DC can't take any, their image hits are just keep on coming. And that's why if this is negotiating tactics, if Warner Brothers hires Matt Reeves, if I'm the executives, I'm like on the phone cursing out whoever's management is, like, you're worthless as a person for doing this to me. But yeah, like a week after it looks like it's almost said and done, it's gone again. And the rumors of Affleck wanting out, they keep coming. The rumor last week, it came from John Campier from Collider Video. I actually watched that clip, and he said, "Don't run with this as a story, but this is what I'm hearing. Take it as a grain of salt." And then, you know, people ran with it. He went on this week again to say, again, "I wouldn't run with this as a story, but what I've heard is that Ben wants out and that the feeling might be mutual on Warner Brothers' side." So If this is true.
Which, if that's true, that means that Justice League is the five-alarm fire that will destroy your home.
It could be, and it would seem that way, or it could just be Ben is like, I gave up my movie for all of this stuff, and all I got is dumped on for a whole year, and my movie sucked. So I just want it done. There's also that. That's the optimist in me. That's the side I'm hoping for. I don't know. But again, it all comes down to none of this looking good for Warner Brothers.
Well, I mean, look. Bottom line, Reeves has still got to be on post-production for War of the Planet of the Apes till June. I mean, they'll probably lock pictures sometime in May, and then they'll start doing press in June, and the movie come out in July. I mean, he's still got a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, this, you know, at least when the news hit about Rogue One, Gareth had been done with Godzilla for a little while. You know, you need time to breathe, especially with Reeves, who's done basically these two movies back to back that are so CGI heavy. Mm-hmm. I mean, those processes aren't easy. And to be quite honest, whatever script Terrio came up with, Reeves is going to want input on that.
Yeah.
And his stories are very nuanced, they're very deep, they're very complex, which is very easy to do with a character like Batman. But, I mean, he's going to want input on story, so you're going to have to do more script development. And you're talking about probably not getting in front of cameras in this year. You're talking about probably getting in front of cameras early 2018 at the earliest.
The
November on the outside.
If he were insane and wanted to just work straight through, you can probably get in front of cameras in like October. But that's insane. That is not going to happen. So I think he'll sign on. I think this is negotiating. And
well, the thing that makes me think that it is a negotiation tactic in public is the fact that we haven't seen a Hollywood Reporter story or a Variety story or a Collider story or an IGN story or a Birth Movies Death story about, you know, here they've moved on to negotiating with X.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah, I think he'll sign on. And I don't think this movie starts to shoot until, like, early 2018. But that means DC's still doing this little song and dance. Pretty much you can bypass Wonder Woman. It's pretty much up until Justice League. Wonder Woman, I really think that thing is insulated enough where the movie can be, it'll be decent to good. It's all going to be about Justice League. I'm hoping that Justice League just needs to be decent. I don't care if it's good, I just need it to be decent. Like, have a coherent story and don't make the characters do stupid stuff.
Don't create a space wall with mother boxes.
No. Just no. just keep it with everything you need to do in there. Keep this thing simple. Just go bare bones. And if you go bare bones, have the characters be the characters people know, the movie will just be decent. It has a chance to be good. That's all it needs to do. It just needs to survive. But with the whole Ben thing, and it won't come out before Justice League because he's in the Warner Brothers camp, and Warner Brothers is in the Ben Affleck's business, so while they might want to part ways on Batman, they're not going to do anything to mess up this money from Justice League. Warner Brothers is going to continue to get beat down for everything until Wonder Woman, and that'll just slow it down. But they will continue to get beat down until Justice League, and they better pray to God it's good.
Okay, so here's to you, Zack Snyder.
I don't envy Zack at all. I like Zack, but this is not a good spot for him.
All right, so let's move on to another DC movie that has yet to have any kind of traction. Shazam. It may have landed a director from a very positive indie movie that's coming out this month called Lights Out.
And what's his name? I wrote his name down.
Let's see. David F. Sandberg.
Yes. So, because it's a horror movie, I've never seen it, and I will never see it. But, you know, that is a positive thing that they have a director. Finally, it sounds like this movie is finally going to get some traction besides The Rock, which is good. I still just want to know who's going to be Shazam. That's kind of where I'm at right now. And mm-hmm. I have my top candidate since Gambit is never going to be made. Just go ahead and do Channing Tatum. Just get that out of the way. He can be, he's a big enough goofball, and he's just jacked enough that this can work. Channing Tatum and Shazam, let's roll with it.
Could definitely have some great chemistry.
Yeah.
Between him and The Rock. But you still have to cast the kid, so.
Yeah, because he's going to be a big part of the movie, too. I got nothing on that. I don't know. Get one of the kids from Stranger Things. People like that.
Indeed. And Wonder Woman may have found this villain.
Yes. We still don't know much about Wonder Woman.
Other than it's built to carry Gal Gadot to a 3-star match.
Yes, and that's all we want. That's all we want.
We don't need a match of the year candidate. We just need a 3-star match.
Anything above 3 stars is like...
gravy.
They are killing it if it's above 3 stars. But it's been rumored that the main baddie was going to be Ares. Since Wonder Woman is tied into Greek mythology, Ares is the god of war. And they've cast... It's rumored that they've cast... I don't know his real name, but he was Lupin in the Harry Potter movies.
David Tillis.
Yes. But from what they've said in that release, the character is going to be a mix of CGI and practical, which if you've seen Ares from Wonder Woman, that you can understand why. He's like a towering figure. He wears a big helmet where you can't really see his face. You just kind of see his little beady eyes. Just Google Wonder Woman Ares, and what there'll probably be an image from the comic book. That's what he's going to look like in the movie. So it's nice to get that confirmation and to actually have a face to put with who the bad guy is going to be. Now it's just a matter of seeing him. And maybe since they dropped this weekend, when they drop the trailer, which what I would assume would be within the next month, we'll probably get our first glimpse at Ares.
Yeah, that whatever the next big Warner Brothers release would be, would probably be the next... Let's see here. Looking.
If I'm done, I'd rock it with her. I'd put it with Beauty and the Beast.
Next big Warner Brothers movie is March 24th, Chips.
Okay, I need you to read that again, because you said big Warner Brothers movie, right?
The next Warner Brothers produced movie, yeah.
That movie's not worth... I won't even say Lego. It's not even worth Ninjago. It doesn't rate any of those. It's like
farm it out. Let other people advertise on your movie.
Yeah, nobody cares about that. But I will put Wonder Woman in front of Beauty and the Beast or Ghost in the Shell for sure. One of those two.
Yeah. So Chad, live action Lion King is a thing.
Yes,
it Hakuna is. Hakuna Matata. What a wonderful phrase. Ain't no passing craze. So we finally have some casting announcements on a movie that I didn't think it was going to get made before Jungle Book 2.
Once they snatched Favreau, I was like, oh, this is happening next.
So Jungle Book 2. Your thoughts on James Earl Jones returning to the role of Mufasa, which you foolishly thought they were going to recast, and the fact that Donald Glover is going to be Simba.
I'm going to start with the second one first, because that's the one I saw first. Again, Donald Glover is having, this is a continuation of last year, but he's having the best year ever. He's going to be Lando Calrissian and Simba.
Not to mention racking up Writers Guild and Golden Globes for Atlanta.
And then he had his album come out. He's having a spectacular year. I would like to be Donald Glover right now. Or at least have half of what Donald Glover had this past year. I would be doing great. So when I saw that, again... It never crossed my mind, but I'm like, that is perfect. I can live with that. I want to see that now. And then later, they rolled out James Earl Jones is returning as Mufasa. So, first I'm going to be the wet blanket and be like, I don't know if I want this. Mostly because as we've seen with these live action Disney movies, they're kind of like almost beat for beat. They change some things, but now you're going beat for beat and you're taking the same dude again. It's like, this feels kind of cheap. So I say that first. And then, and it also comes with the thing that I'm a little bit disappointed because I thought they should have done Lawrence Fishburne because I thought that would work. But then I come back from that, it's like, it's James Earl Jones and it's Mufasa again. I'm and not going to cry over it.
You're not going to get that many more opportunities to hear him do voice work.
No. And so I'm not... Again, I wouldn't have done it, but I'm not upset that they're doing it. I guess they felt it was too iconic to not have. Now, since you've done that, do you also go, well, Scar is too iconic to not have Jeremy Irons come back for it? And listening to him on the press tour for some things, you pay him enough, he'll do whatever you want. So, I don't know. I don't. And if you don't get him, who do you get? I've heard people say, like, Michael Fassbender and stuff. But I don't know. I haven't thought that far ahead of it. But since we have the original Mufasa, do we get the original Scar?
Be interesting to see. Yeah. I would think they go in a different direction from with Scar. I just think that James Earl Jones is one of those you can't recast. And honestly, if he's alive, it's like, you know, you want to get this out of him before he goes. Kind of like, you know, Vader one last time in Rogue One. Yeah. And Vader on Rebels. You know, he's there. You're not just going to re-edit the voice. You want to get him to do it if possible. So.
Yeah, I'm not upset about it. I will... as soon as I hear the first line come out, this real looking lion's mouth, I'm gonna be like, sold. Sold.
Take all the tickets.
Yeah.
So Chad, the Great Wall was fun. It was something different and something unique. Unfortunately, you were not able to join me, but the movie was definitely has some third act issues, very weird, but it was okay all around. And our Oscar preview this year will suffice me to say that La La Land is going to win Best Picture of the Year, and I would like to see what the vote tally is on that little card that they hand David Chazelle and the producers, because I'd like to see what the difference is, because it's really unclear as to what would come in second. I mean, we've lived in a world in the last few years where, you know, it was down to two movies going into the Kodak Theater. It's one movie this year. You know, it's not a race, so...
Yeah, that's... Well, hopefully, I'm going to try this time to actually see La La Land and, like, one or two other ones before we actually record that show. Just so I can actually have a take on it. But, yeah, I mean, everybody that I hear talk about it, it's like La La Land, everything.
Well, you could always join me in the 24-hour...
No. No.
Assuming that our beloved theaters around here do that.
For your sake, I hope they don't.
I hope they do. All right, so... That'll about do it for this week's episode of the Movies on the Brain podcast. If you want to keep up with this podcast, all 20 of our listeners, we need more listeners. This is the point of our podcast where I do the Arrested Development thing and say, please tell your friends about this podcast. If you want to keep up with this podcast that needs more listeners, tell your friends. Repeat, tell your friends about the podcast. You can keep up with me on Twitter at BCWTigerFan. Again, that is at BCWTigerFan. You can find the podcast on iTunes at Movies on the Brain. And Chad, you have a Twitter as well. That is at The Mets Theory.
Yes.
Correct? Again, that is at The Mets Theory. Please like, please follow, please retweet, and please tell your friends about the podcast.
Yes, please.
You gotta love ranting and ravings from us on various unsundry topics. So if you want to hear us continue to rant, please tell your friends. For Chad Metz, I am Brian C. Wood. Thank you very much and have a pleasant evening.